This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside of the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. Femi Abebefe, alongside Michael Lombardi, out in the great state of New Jersey. Michael, how are we doing today? Man, we've had an NFL game, or a preseason game, I should say. Now we're heading into the weekend here. How are we doing?
We're doing great, Femi. Yeah, we're on the routine, right? I mean, I think now we got the flow going. We're going to, from now until February, we got games, maybe just college games one weekend, but we got games every week, so it's fun. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to it. A lot of stuff happening around the league, so it's been good. I'm well-rested, had 2 days off, so I'm ready to go.
Hell yeah. No, I think back into the routine, I think, is what I'm excited about, because we get that football every single week, which is the cadence that I love after not having it for about 175 days or whatever it was. But we do have a fun show on deck for you guys. Coming up 45 minutes from now, Carl Jick Jack Johnson, sportsbook director over at the Beau Rivage, will join us. We'll discuss some SEC futures. Also, we'll get the landscape of the national title market as well. At 8:15 West Coast time, 11:15 Eastern, Troy Rank, Broncos insider at Denver 7, also the host of the Denver Broncos podcast. He'll be joining us. We'll discuss the Denver Broncos, of course. And then at 8:30 West Coast time, 11:30 Eastern, it's Thomas Gable, race and sportsbook director over at the Borgata. We'll get some Pac-12 and Big Ten futures from TG. But let's start there, Michael, because obviously the big news in the sports world yesterday, conference realignment, it's officially just gone absolutely haywire. The conference that I grew up on, the conference that I loved, the Pacific 12, has now pretty much disbanded, with Oregon and Washington heading to the Big Ten. Then last night we saw Arizona State, and Utah join the Big 12, leaving only four teams behind in the quote-unquote Pac-12. But I didn't get to talk to you yesterday about this thing was breaking during the show and all that stuff, but kind of what is your feeling? What is your reaction? Like, I know obviously you do the NFL stuff, but you watch a lot of college football. I mean, now we have a West Coast power conference that's no longer.
Well, I think once the commissioner of the Pac-12 presented that ridiculous streaming deal to these teams. Yeah. And they all waited. I mean, they all waited. Colorado didn't. Colorado said, look, we kind of know where this is going. We're out. Mm-hmm. And they broke out, which was fine. But everybody else kind of waited to see what was behind the curtain, what he was working on. Remember when they had the Pac-12 media day there in Las Vegas, they didn't want to talk about their media rights deal. Well, everybody wants to talk about your media rights deal. And that Apple streaming deal, you know, didn't cut it.
No.
So how would you expect Arizona to stay in the conference when they can go to the Big 12 and guarantee themselves X amount of dollars? How can you expect Utah to stay when they can do that? So, I mean, you can blame it on Larry Cook, because I think a lot of it started there. I really believe the problem with the Pac-12 is the problem of time zones. I think when they start their games at 11 o'clock East Coast time, mm-hmm. or 10 o'clock Central time, I think half of the United States doesn't stay up for it. Remember, we start watching games here on the East Coast at 12 o'clock. And, you know, those college games go all day. We love it. But I think, to me, with this realignment where everybody's kind of moved to a better time zone, you're going to be able to see these games played at a normal time. And I think that's the big issue, because the Pac-12 had some really good teams. They really did. Dorian Thompson Robinson, I mean, on Thursday night, he threw the ball well. I thought he looked impressive.
Yeah.
You know, but not a lot of people saw him play at UCLA because he was playing at 11 o'clock at night on the East Coast. I think that lost some of its appeal, and I think that's why their TV rights and their media rights went way down.
Well, I think also, too, the distribution, because you mentioned that not a lot of people were staying up to watch them. Not a lot of people could just even watch it, period. Because the Pac-12 refused to ever go to DirecTV. And this goes back years when they first started the Pac-12 network, and it was just on like the Coxes or the Comcast and Xfinity and all that stuff. But we're like, okay, like, is the Pac-12 going to join up with DirecTV? Because you could get the Big Ten network, the SEC network. All these things were on DirecTV, to where if you were living in Seattle, Washington, you could watch Rutgers versus Penn State on the Big Ten network. But if you were living in Seattle, Washington, and you didn't have DirecTV and your favorite team was in the Pac-12, you couldn't watch that game. That right there, it's like, if you limit your distribution, then you're going to limit how big your schools can become brands, which then ultimately it turns into a situation to where you're no longer viable in the eyes of these TV networks. Because let's get this straight. Like, the TV networks are the ones that are running the show here. Like, the presidents and the ADs and all that stuff, they have somewhat of a say, but it's NBC, CBS, Fox, ESPN. Like, those, that's what's driving a lot of this stuff, because they're trying to get the schools that they feel is most viable for the eyeballs to go ahead and make the most money as possible. It's all the TV money. But the Pac-12 really limited itself by not being able to have wide distribution, and then to come back, like you mentioned with George Kliavkov, the new Pac-12 commissioner, and say, all right, we've had trouble with distribution. Here's the plan. How about Apple? like, come on. Like, you know, like nobody was going to stick around for that. That's why Colorado had no faith. And then we saw Washington, Oregon kind of play this dance here. We're like, well, we might stay, we might come back. And then they're like, okay, let's get the hell out of here once we get the Big Ten to offer us something of significance. And ultimately, it was to the demise of the conference, which is really sad for me, who grew up on the West Coast. Like I love the Pac-10. I love the Pac-12. And now it's no more.
Now it's no more. And, you know, 108 years of history down the drain because they couldn't put together the right packaging. And, you know, they couldn't merge with another conference. And so we go on. And, you know, Arizona now is in the Big 12. Arizona State went to the Big 12. Look, how about that Big 12 basketball? Let's talk about that for a second.
It's
going to
be a
war. Arizona, Kansas, Baylor.
Houston.
I mean, you talk about a power conference in basketball and not a bad conference in football either. You know, when you look at the teams in the conference, I mean, West Virginia is going to be a tough trip for the schools to go back to. Central Florida is going to be a tough trip. But, look, I think to me, going to Oregon and going to Washington for Arizona or Arizona State was a far trip. So they'll make it work. And, look, they guarantee themselves some profit. Look, schools are businesses, and they've got to make money. And if the TV deal doesn't bring them money, you're not going to make enough money selling tickets.
So here's a comment from the Oregon State Athletic Director, Scott Barnes, in terms of like what was going on over the past 24 hours. And like the article, this is from Stuart Mandel over at The Athletic, I believe it was, or at least he shared this article. I'm not sure who actually wrote it. But Scott Barnes said, quote, "We were literally hours away from a deal that everybody could embrace. At the 11th hour, the Big Ten reengaged and lured Oregon and Washington from the Pac-12. Oregon State's Scott Barnes said that, you know, he's been an athletic director at four different schools. He said, quote, "I've never seen so many last-minute decision and twists and turns as I've seen through this process. Conference realignment just doesn't make sense anymore. What this enterprise was built on was regionality and rivalries. That is gone. That is leaving the Pac-12. Some of the most special pieces about our model is regionality of competition and rivalries. Those things are forgotten." And I think, like, obviously, like, money's going to make the world go around, and TV money is out there. So obviously these schools are going to go ahead and try to take that. But I do think that, like, college sports, the tradition and the backbone of college sports is those rivalries, and it's those regional battles. And now it's kind of gone national with Washington now facing an East Coast team, or some of these other schools, like UCF is now playing Utah in a conference game. Like you do lose some of that. And I get, like, things change in the world. The only thing that's constant in the world is change. But man, like, sometimes it's like, do we go a little bit too far with this stuff?
Well, rivalries are made by teams being good, right? Baltimore left Cleveland left Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore, the Browns left Cleveland and became the Ravens. The Ravens have a good rivalry with the Pittsburgh Steelers as they do with any team. Same with the Cincinnati Bengals. Same with the Browns, which is inherent right there. So rivalries are about being good. Rivalries aren't good. When I was growing up, it was Dallas and Washington. That was a great rivalry. It's not so great anymore, right? So rivalries are all predicated on the talent. Now, there's only those echelon, Ohio State, Michigan. You know, that nothing needs to be said besides that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a great – that's born. That's something that's just been grandfathered in. So these new rivalries will become created. I mean, I could see it. I mean, look, once you get good – then it becomes a rivalry. When Colorado was good, they had a rivalry with Nebraska. When Colorado was good, they had a rivalry with Oklahoma. When they're not good, they don't have one.
Yeah, but I feel like in college, though, even if you're not good, there's still that grandfathered in rivalry. Like, the NFL is a whole different thing, like you mentioned with Dallas and Washington, which I 100% agree with. It doesn't hit the same like it did in the 80s and the 90s, at least for me growing up. But like, I remember the Apple Cup, and this is funny because this is actually when both teams were horrendous. In 2008, both Washington and Washington State were winless. And you would have thought that that damn game was the Super Bowl, the way that those fans out there at Martin Stadium and Pullman were like, we got to get this win. And they ultimately beat Washington. That was the year that the Huskies went 0-12. And like that still mattered to those people, despite the teams being absolutely horrendous. Like, and that's – Like, those are the kind of the cross-state stuff that we used to get, like Texas, Texas A&M. Now they're going to play starting in 2024 when Texas and OU go to the SEC. But the fact that we haven't had that since 2012 or whatever it was, like, it just feels wrong, you know? It feels wrong, yeah. But it's just, I guess that's what it
but
is.
But I think the other thing, too, about rivalries, though, Femi, is because of the way recruiting is and because, like, for example, Western Pennsylvania, and if you talk to the Penn State people, they'll tell you, look, Western PA, because of the economy, the recruiting base isn't what it was back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, where all those players were coming from Western PA.
Yeah.
You know, because of the economy, people are leaving. And so recruiting has become more national than ever before. I mean, Washington State can't survive their program on Washington kids or Idaho kids, right? Mm-hmm. They've got to go out. They've got to find different – they've got to find players. So when the recruiting becomes more outside the local area, then all of a sudden the rivalries are going to become great. That's why for Arizona or Arizona State, you know, they've gone into Texas to recruit before. They're still going to recruit in California. So it's still going to be – it's all about your recruiting areas. Why did Nebraska fall a little short? Because when Nebraska left the Big 12, they lost Texas as one of their areas that they needed to recruit to.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Rhule was able to get two flights in from Houston to Lincoln, Dallas to Lincoln. That helps his recruiting. That's what he needs. So recruiting is all predicated on the areas that you play in.
No, 100%. And for a team like Utah, we were talking about this before the show started with some of the guys behind the glass. I'm like, Utah, I think, is going to have a hell of a time in that Big 12 because they already recruit Texas pretty well. I think that's probably the best program, at least from the football perspective, that's
good.
In the Big 12
now. They could go in the Southeast Conference and be good. They're good. They're well coached. They're tough. They know who they are, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, Big 12, inviting Utah to the party. Them boys are going to beat you up a little bit. We'll get to what's on Michael's mind on the other side of the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Tormented by the transfer portal, coaching carousel got you confused? Well, let our 2023 VSiN College Football Guide get you ready for the upcoming season. This year's College Football Preview magazine includes season win totals, picks, and previews for all 133 FBS teams, plus feature articles on how to create a power ratings model, calculate home field advantage, and who to bet on for the Heisman. Get Matt Eumanns' preseason top 25, Steve Mackinnon's top betting systems, and what you need to know to be ready for kickoff. The College Football Betting Guide is out now and is one of many benefits of becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber, so sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. We're rolling along here on a Saturday morning. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi. Michael, before we get into what's on your mind and some NFL preseason stuff, the Pac-12 now has four schools. So we have Oregon State, Washington State, Stanford, and Cal. The Big 12 has 16 schools. The Big 10 has 18 schools. Can you come up with some new names for us here for these conferences? Like, is that something that you would be able to handle?
No, I think, you know, look, I think we're going to RIP the Pac-12. I think it's going to be interesting. Stanford and Cal go to the Big Ten. Now, remember, when they go in the Big Ten, they're not getting the full share. They're getting different revenue streams, and they won't get a full share until the new TV deal shows up in 2030, so seven years from now. So that's going to be interesting to see what they do with those schools and how it all works. I'm surprised the ACC isn't trying to get involved. I know Florida State wants to try to do something more because Florida State's one of those schools, Femi, where they don't have a great alumni donor base. I mean, it's shocking that they don't. It's one of the reasons why Jimbo Fisher left for the huge contract at A&M. The facilities have not been great at Florida State. Their ability to generate revenue from their alumni hasn't been great. So they need that TV package to really keep their program on par with these other schools.
Yeah, no, we'll see what happens with the ACC. It feels like they've been kind of asleep at the wheel a little bit during this round of conference realignment, but we know that the realignment's not done. I'm sure we'll be right back here next year talking about the ACC and what's going to happen with some of those schools. What's going to happen with Notre Dame? Are they going to get interested in joining the Big Ten? Because they could make more money joining the Big Ten than they're currently doing right now with their solo operation there being an independent. So there's a lot that's changing down the pike here in college sports and college football obviously being the front of mind, but this also affects all the other sports as well, like basketball, like you said in the last segment with the Big 12, how that's going to be an electric conference. But then you also have the softball, baseball, like, you know, soccer, all those sports get affected, excuse me, by all this conference realignment stuff. So we'll see what happens in the next year or so. But let's get to the NFL, Michael, because we did have a preseason game earlier this past Thursday. The Browns come back and beat the Jets 21-16. What's on your mind after watching that preseason? What should bettors and just fans be looking for when we see these preseason games?
Well, I mean, look, you can't evaluate the whole team as a complete entity, right? Because they're playing pieces. For the Jets, they need Mekhi Becton to play well. He played 7 snaps the other day. And when you watch the end zone copy of the game, you could see him favoring his right knee. He couldn't really push off. He took himself out. And he was playing left tackle, which I found interesting. Why? Because if he is healthy and ready to go, Dwayne Brown's the left tackle. So why is he getting reps? He should be getting reps at right tackle, because if he ends up being healthy enough to play, that's where he's got to play. They're not. Dwayne Brown's never played right tackle. So you're not moving him over there. So it's interesting that they started him over there. And then Max Mitchell played right tackle over there, and that was less than impressive with the backups from Cleveland. So this Jet offensive line, now we've got 3 more games to go, but they're going to be a work in progress. They're going to be a work in progress. And, you know, Zach Wilson's going to be a little bit of a work in progress. It, you know, he didn't play poorly, but it wasn't like he had command. The only quarterback that I thought was quick-minded and playing well was Dorianson Thompson-Robinson. I thought he was really good in the game. I thought sometimes his accuracy slipped. He missed the throw over the middle, but he had good rhythm. I thought he had good command. He ran the ball very effectively. I think the Browns, for a 5th-round pick, again, it's one game. But in that game, he looked like he had way more ability than Kellen Mond. I think Kellen Mond is what Kellen Mond is. It's not going to be good enough.
Well, when you watch that, I'm curious to see if you got the same takeaway, because I even tweeted this out when I was watching the game. I was like, they need to play Dorian Thompson-Robinson more. I want to see him play with more of the better players in the first half of the game. And maybe in this upcoming game against Washington, which is the traditional week one of the preseason, maybe play DTR the entire game and see what you have. You know, I feel like this is the evaluation process, because like you, I don't think we're getting anything from Kellen Mond.
Well, I think that's part of what preseason's about, right? You make decisions on who's going to get reps. Remember, preseason football is a mathematical problem. Okay, there's only so many reps, there's only so much time. And so the head coach, the guy who's the guardian of winning, has to make the decisions on who should get the reps. And when you play these games, you gain information on who should get more reps. Now, look, I don't want to send this guy to the Hall of Fame, but I do think that, you know, we deserve to see more of him. It was interesting. I thought he was undervalued. I really did. I thought he was a better player than a 5th rounder. I really did. I thought he had arm strength. I thought he had the ability to make. Now, he's inconsistent, but he started a lot of games. To me, he was a better Desmond Ridder, I felt like, coming out in the draft. And I think he will. Now, Joshua Dobbs has got to get some reps, too, because he's going to be the backup. But I agree. I think it should be Dobbs and Robinson and Thompson Robinson, but before Kellen Mond, I'm sorry.
Do you think we'll see Watson this preseason?
I would hope we see a little bit of Watson. I think you got to play a little bit. You know, I think you got to play a little bit just to kind of get some rhythm going. I think you got to do that. Look, I think he played so poorly and got caught by the speed of the game that I think you're going to have to put him in there and let him go a little bit, get his toe in the water. I don't want him to run the ball. I just want him to go out there and execute the passing game, the play action. You could see the Browns are going to be a heavy play action pass team. And you could also see from the Browns the way they set their defensive front that they have a complete understanding of how they fit in the run game. I think they're going to be a much better just watching their backups play run defense in that tape. I think their run defense is going to be much improved.
I thought their offensive line was opening up some holes as well, what they were doing in the first half especially. I was like, oh, they've been repping the hell out of this run game offensively as well. And they were, like, usually preseason offensive lines, you're not going to be effective in the run game, but I thought they were pretty effective in the run game. And that was with the backups. We'll see what they do with the starters once we actually get to the fall. But we do have some news that we need to get to here in this segment, and it pertains to Alvin Kamara. This broke yesterday afternoon. The New Orleans Saints star running back suspended for the first 3 games for the role in the incident that happened back in February of 2022 here in Las Vegas at the Pro Bowl. So Kamara will miss the first 3 games. He spoke with the media for the first time since the end of last season yesterday after practice. This was before the news came out, but here's what Kamara had to say when he was addressing the topic with the New Orleans media.
You know, I never want to be involved in something where someone gets hurt or severely injured or anything. Poor judgment on my end. Definitely a bad decision, but I'm a man. Everything I've ever done in my life, I stood on, and I could take accountability for, and I could say when I'm wrong. And I was completely wrong, embarrassed the Saints, embarrassed my family and my mother, embarrassed myself, embarrassed the city, and the Shield, obviously, embarrassed the NFL.
Well, Kamara showing contrition there in that soundbite, talking to the media. The first three games, Michael, home against the Titans, at the Panthers, at the Packers. He'll miss all three of those.
Yeah, I mean, and that puts the onus really on Jamal Williams, who is a short yardage. I mean, Jamal Williams is a good runner, but he doesn't give you that passing game. Kendra Miller, the kid from TCU who they drafted in the third round, got to watch him in this preseason to see what he brings to the table. With Kamara out of the game, right, it's a completely different offense because Kamara is such a weapon in the passing game. Screens, you know, ability to catch the flats, third down, they look for Kamara to make plays. So that's going to hurt them a little bit, especially the continuity of their offense as they get going here. So going to put a lot of pressure on Williams, but really the pressure is going to be on Kendra Miller. And what we have to watch in preseason with Kendra Miller is, can he pass protect?
Yep.
Can he pass protect? And I don't care who it's against, ones or twos. He's got to be able to demonstrate his ability to stay in there and block and know who to protect. Because if he can't protect, it's going to create some problems.
I know you said you're going to be watching some tape later on this afternoon, getting caught up on everything going on around the league here. But this upcoming week, Michael, you got to keep a keen eye out because we got to do our preseason and training camp all-stars list, okay? Because the people are buzzing about this stuff. I was looking for Jason Brownlee during the Hall of Fame game. He got a couple passes, two catches for 17 yards. I was hoping he did a little bit more. But we're, all these camp all-stars, now the lights are going to be on. They're going to be on.
Yeah, we got to put together the week one based on the media, based on all the reports. You know, this guy had a good day. This guy had a bad day. Jimmy Garoppolo threw three interceptions. You know, who did good, who didn't. We have to kind of put that all together and see what it leads us to in week one of the preseason. But, look, I think when you're watching these – like Kellen Mond, you know, for him to go out there and not play well as a veteran, that's disappointing. I don't think you could say that about Zach Wilson. I mean, he missed a throw on third down that he had a chance to make. The guy was kind of covered. He didn't really run a very good route, so he threw it high and outside. I didn't get a sense he had great rhythm. He had a chance to scramble for first down. Threw a deep ball. I mean, how about Aaron Rodgers taking credit for the deep ball? They threw a nine route. What did we say on Thursday? The nine routes are going to be the play of the day.
It was a nice ball from Zach Wilson. I'll give him credit.
It was a great throw.
Yeah, hit him in stride. So we love to see that from the former second overall pick. On the other side, we'll play a little game of Bettor's Choice here on the Lombardi Line, and we're presented by BetMGM.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN expert leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. This is the final weekend to sign up at our lowest price of the summer. Sign up today for only $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe.
The college betting guide, Femi, have you a chance to go through it at all? It's tremendous.
I've been pouring
the pro guide's unbelievable. The college betting guide, I don't spend as much time in the college area in terms of some of the lower level, the MAC and all those. I thought the college guide is probably the best guide, the best college guide I've seen out there. It's really helpful. And I think you need it more than ever now because of the way that, all these players have transferred. When I was at that Chris Russo event yesterday, some guys were asking me about, betting college football. And I give out the same advice is pick two or three conferences, study them. And don't study the best teams. Study the worst teams because they might not get those lines correct.
No, I think that's great advice. And, like, you want to make sure you kind of go and weed it down a little bit. Because, like we said, there's 133 Division I teams. You're just not going to be able to do, excellent handicapping of all those teams. Like, unless, like, If you found a way to do that, congratulations. But I don't think it's possible in terms of time being spent. So we do encourage everyone to go ahead and get the VEASAN College Football Betting Guide. I was pouring through it yesterday because we had a lot of guests on yesterday talking about the guide and obviously promoting it as well as giving people a little bit of appetizer of what they can get once they actually subscribe and get the guide. But Wisconsin is a team that a lot of folks like here, Michael.
Yeah,
a lot
of
people,
funny.
A lot of people like the Badgers.
We talked about that. Christopher Russo's son, Colin, goes to Wisconsin.
Okay.
And he was, you know, and that was the first thing. And everybody loves Wisconsin, you know, because of the quarterback from SMU that, you know, was under the Rhett Hall offense at SMU, comes in there. Phil Longo from North Carolina now is the new offensive coordinator. So there's a lot of things happening there that, you know, people think. And the schedule, I mean, let's be honest, the schedule is favorable for them. So, you know, I think ultimately that gives them a chance. And you see where that, you know, it, to get that over total is what we're talking about. We're not talking about winning a national championship, but look at the schedule, right? Buffalo, Washington State, Georgia Southern, Perdue. I mean, you know.
Don't get Elliot mad, all right?
That's why I said it. I wanted to see if Elliot was sleeping today. That's all. You know, Rutgers, Iowa. I mean, October 28th is obviously a big game, but they play Ohio State. Nebraska will be a hard game because it always is, but you know, like, look, that I think that's a fairly, fairly easy schedule if they do the right things.
Yeah, like, you don't have Penn State on the schedule. There's no Michigan on the schedule. There's no Michigan State, and like you mentioned, Ohio State. That game is at home. So if you, like, I think every Big Ten West team would sign up for that schedule and say, all right, this is kind of manageable. And the fact that Wisconsin does have that, you mentioned Tanner Mordecai, the quarterback coming over from SMU. Like, a lot of people have been buzzing about him as maybe a dark horse Heisman guy if Wisconsin actually has an elite level season that maybe he can have his name in that conversation. But maybe the Wisconsin's the team that represents the Big Ten West there and plays one of the three-headed monsters of Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State in the Big Ten title game. But I know Bucky, Badger, at least I should say, Whiskey, is very popular among the betting circles as a team that could be better than expectations this season. Let's get into, though, Michael, as we're hanging out here on the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM, into our bettor's choice. These are some options that we have in the NFL betting markets. Similar prices, which makes it kind of a difficult discussion, but a fun discussion. And this first one, these two teams have been linked at the hip all offseason, the Packers and the Jets. So would you rather bet the Packers to make the playoffs at plus 165 or the Jets to miss the playoffs at plus 115?
I would rather play the Packers at plus 165. I think the Packers are going to make the playoffs. I really do. Call me crazy. Look, I don't trust LaFleur. We know this, right? We know how I feel.
Yep.
But I do think they're better on defense. I think Jordan Love is not going to be a disaster. I think he'll play well. Their young receivers will be a year older and play well. And they don't have that cloud hanging over them anymore. And they need Jair Alexander to stay healthy. But Gary's a really good rusher coming off the edge. We talked about Walker as a red chip inside linebacker for them, an off-the-ball backer. I like this team. I really do. And I don't think the North is sitting there like the North in the AFC. I mean, the North in the AFC is really good. Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Baltimore. I get Detroit's good. I get that. I accept that. I don't know if Detroit's elite. Minnesota's beatable. I mean, also, you know, and so Chicago. I'm not saying a bad word about Chicago, but, you know, I mean, God forbid, because they're going to win the Super Bowl. But the reality of it is I think it's doable for them. So I like that one a lot.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it'd be Packers to make the playoffs. I think the Jets are going to make the playoffs as well. I know they have the tough schedule to start out, but I believe in that Jets team to build. As long as the offensive line, if they can get that okay, but I think they'll be able to make it.
I think, you know, as we sit here and discuss this today, there is going to be an 8th and 9th team in the AFC that don't make the playoffs that probably would have made the playoffs in the NFC.
100%.
I just think that. I think there's a lot of good teams in the AFC. Other than Houston and Indy, I see every other team having an opportunity to make the playoffs. Can they? I don't know. It depends on how their quarterback plays, the health, all those things. In the NFC, I have a hard time getting that 17.
Let's move on to the next one here. And this is one team that I feel like people are kind of cooler on heading into this season and one team that everybody loves. They're even talking about it on the Hall of Fame broadcast on Thursday, and that is the Buffalo Bills and the Detroit Lions. The Bills, would you rather bet them to win the AFC East at plus 130, or would you rather bet the Lions to win the NFC North at the same price?
I'm going to go with the Bills to win the East here. I just don't trust the Lions, and I have a hard time with the Lions in the sense that are they going to be able to match the pressure and the expectations? And can Goff continue to protect the football at this incredible level that he did last year? You know, and are they going to be able to play great defensively? And I think those are questions that I have. I think Buffalo is still, with their quarterback Josh Allen, is still a team that's hard to play. Now, they've got to play better defensively, and they've got to be more physical offensively. But I would prefer Buffalo. I would prefer something I know than something I speculate.
Yeah,
at the same price.
100%. And I think, too, like the reason why I believe that there's cooler sentiment on Buffalo is that everyone said that the division is better. AFC East, like with the Dolphins, people like them. But there's question marks with Miami, with Tua's health. And we already see Jalen Ramsey. He's gotten hurt. The Jets, we just outlined their offensive line question marks to start the show. New England, how's the new offense going to work? That's a competitive division.
I'll say this about the East. Now, Miami's offensive line, look, they went through two quarterbacks last year at Miami. The Tua got hurt, and so did Teddy Bridgewater. San Francisco went through four. It's the same protection scheme. I was talking to somebody in the league yesterday, and they were asking me if I was listening to that Play Caller podcast. And yeah. I guess they all kid on the Play Caller podcast. I haven't listened to it yet. They all kid about the fact that Mike McDaniel has this reputation for being this guru in the pass of the run game, and they never ran the ball all last year. And that's what how many times have I said that on the pod and on this show?
You said it all last season.
At some point you got to protect your quarterback. And if that continues, I mean, Vic Fangio's liable to punch him in the nose, and they're going to get the quarterback hurt again.
There's going to be a mutiny in Miami. Let's get to the next one. Speaking of coaching, would you rather bet Sean Payton to win Coach of the Year at 11-1 or Jalen Hurts to win MVP at the same price?
I would bet Jalen Hurts to win MVP because if he has a good season, I think certainly he'll do that. And if the Eagles win, I think they're looking to give Jalen Hurts the MVP. And I think if he does have the numbers, I think he'll get that. Coach of the Year is a little harder, but I like Hurts. I like Hurts to win the MVP at 11-1 over that odds.
Yeah, I see why Sean Payton is the price of 11-1 because I think if Denver has success, a lot of the credit's going to go to him just based on what we saw last year. But to win Coach of the Year, it's hard to do that if you don't win your division. I know Daboll did it without winning the division last year. In fact, he finished in third. But it's usually hard to win that award without winning your division. I think Kansas City is still the rightful team. Speaking of Kansas City, here's this next one. Would you rather bet over 4.5 wins on the Cardinals or under 11.5 wins on the Kansas City Chiefs, both around that even money to +110 range?
I'm going to go the Cardinals here. I don't see how the Chiefs don't win 12. I think there's a possibility the Cardinals don't win 4. So, you know, so I would take the Cardinals. No, it's not the Cardinals over. I can't bet the Cardinals over, and I can't bet the Chiefs under. This is a no play, Elliot.
It's
I'm
a
not
tough
playing
choice.
This one. I'm taking my money home here.
You got to choose.
Confuse me.
You got to choose. We can't put layups.
There's no way they're going. I'll go the Cardinals over for it. I don't think that's a smart play. That's not going to happen. I don't see it.
Yeah, maybe Kyler comes back earlier than expected, but I agree with you. I would not want to play.
That's a prayer.
It is a prayer.
That's a prayer.
It's a prayer at +100, which is not a lot of fun. But yeah, I don't think Kansas City is going under 11.5. No, like I've been on record. I'm done doubting the Chiefs with Mahomes and Andy Reid. At last year, I did it. They made me look stupid, so we're done.
Let's ask Jick Jack that when we have him back in the next plot. I want to hear what he thinks on that plot.
All right. Well, ask Jick Jack. Would you rather go over 4.5 on Arizona or under 11.5 on Kansas City? We'll get to that and the SEC futures and the national titles futures markets on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a same game parlay wager with at least four legs on any MLB game. And if all legs of the parlay hit but one, you'll get your stake back in bonus bets up to $25. BetMGM and Game Sense remind you to play responsibly. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 plus to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. U.S. promotional offers not available in Kansas, Mississippi, Nevada, D.C., New York, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in most states. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. We're presented by BetMGM. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. And joining us now, it's our buddy Carl Jick Jack Johnson, the sportsbook director over at the Beau Rivage in Biloxi. Jick Jack, hope all is well. I see you got your SEC background ready to roll. We'll get into the SEC futures and the national title futures in just a bit here, but we wanted to ask you an NFL question off the top here, because in the last segment I asked this to Michael, and we were both like, what the hell would you do in this scenario? So this is a would-you-rather scenario, Jick Jack. Would you rather bet on the Cardinals over 4.5 wins or on the Kansas City Chiefs at under 11.5 wins?
Wow. Well, I can tell you I'm not betting the Cardinals over 4.5. You know what? I would lean probably Chiefs under 11.5 here, and I'll tell you why. It's just, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, this year is no different, because every time they take the field, they got a big target on their back. I mean, you know, they're just unbelievable. But, you know, it's hard to repeat, and I'm going to give this division, you know, a little credit here. You know, I think Denver's going to make a pretty good run. The Chargers are 3-1 to win that that AFC West. So I'm going to give the division a little strength. Kansas City's a big favorite, but I think some teams are going to be after them. And to win 12 games there, it's going to be tough to do, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those where they're both tough. It's the lesser of what you think. I you know, it's like, who do you have more confidence in? I mean, and so it's really like, who do you have least confidence in? And you can't go in that direction. It's almost a trick question, I feel like.
Yeah. I think the best way to go about it, Michael, if I'm not betting either one. I'm going to leave them both alone.
Yeah, that's our producer, Elliot Bowman, putting out the hardball questions here for us on the Lombardi Line. We're hanging out with Carl Jick Jack Johnson, sportsbook director over at the Beau Rivage. Well, Jick Jack, let's get into the national title futures market here, because I know you are down south where everyone is excited for college football. We're excited for college football here. Our college football betting guide just dropped at VSiN on Thursday. We encourage everybody to go out and subscribe to that so they can get right for the fall. But right now, the favorites to win the title, the Georgia Bulldogs, +225 to go ahead and three-peat the two-time defending national champion Bulldogs. Alabama's at 6-1. You have a couple Big Ten teams in Ohio State and Michigan at 7-1 and 8-1, respectively. Then LSU's at 12-1. From the national title perspective, can you really go further down the board than 12-1, or are we just kind of sitting here at the top and seeing who wins this thing and who stays healthy by the time we get to next January?
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I got 5 teams circled. This is going to go through. I mean, think about Georgia. So I think the three-peat has been done once before. I think it was, believe it or not, I believe it was Minnesota in like 1934, 35, and 36. So, wow. But to do this in modern era football, just really unheard of. But my 5 teams that I think have a really good shot and I just don't see anybody else in that group is Georgia, LSU, Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State. I know there's some cases for USC and, you know, Florida State being much improved. But, think about this. Georgia is -$1.10 to win the SEC. Now, crazy. Yeah, that's a strong number, because they're going to win the East, so they're going to be in the championship game. And, you know, Georgia is going to be in all 12 of their games this year. They're going to be double-digit favorites. They got to replace Bennett. I think Carson Beck will take over there. They're just loaded. They got a strong running back room. And the thing about Georgia is they don't play Alabama, LSU, or Texas A&M. And more importantly, Georgia doesn't have to play Georgia. I mean, that's, you know, that SEC is just going to be unbelievable. Alabama, I mean, they go 11-2 last year. They lose two games, both on the road, I think, by a total of 4 or 5 points. Look, Nick Saban, it's no secret. I'm a Nick Saban fan. I think he's the best coach in college football. Even knowing what Kirby's done the last couple of years. And then, you know, LSU, I mean, look, they've done an unbelievable job down there. I mean, it's unbelievable how Kelly has came in, kind of developed. He's gotten the crowd. He's gotten the fans behind him. You know, Jalen Daniels is back with them. I think he had like 29 touchdowns and 3 or 4 interceptions last year. They returned all their offensive linemen. Defensively, they were susceptible to the long ball. So I think they got some help back in the defensive backfield. See if we can't fix that. But it's going to be a war. I mean, that's going to be an interesting division. Conference, and it's going to be interesting to see what goes on.
You know, one team you left out, and I was going through the betting guide last night, brushing up for the show, is Tennessee. Now, look, when Hooker left Virginia Tech and went to Tennessee, nobody thought much of it. But Heupel did a great job of getting him to play well. And if he can get Milton to play at a similar level, I think what's not being told or discussed enough about Tennessee is their defense. You know, they have 7 starters back from a group that only gave up 23.5 points. Their offensive line is still intact, and they get to play Georgia at Rocky Top. I mean, you know, and so I kind of think at 35-1 or 30-1, could they win the national championship? Probably not. But they have a lot of the ingredients, and it's a big assumption that Milton's going to play well. I get that. But it would have been his big assumption that Hooker played well, too.
Yeah. You know, Mike, that's a great point because, you know, it's tough to tie your money up when you're betting these futures with say, Georgia. You know, you're tying your money up for 8 months at plus 225 or 230. If I bet these things, Tennessee is actually the type of team that I'm looking for to bet. I mean, you know, yeah, the chances of them winning it are not good. And like you say, you can get them at 35-40-1, but that's why you make the bet. And who knows what can happen? Just like you said, I mean, they've got that game circled against Georgia. And if they beat Georgia in Rocky Top, you're talking about a whole different scenario now going on. It could be interesting, and that's where the value's at. You're right.
Well, I mean, they got to go to Alabama. I get that. Mm-hmm. That'll be a hard game. Tough ticket. Bill Berman will be there to help out everybody's program. I'm sure he'll be on the sideline helping with Nick Saban. But the reality of that'll be a hard game. That'll be a hard game, and I don't dispute that. But the Georgia game, to me, look, I just have – when I watch Heupel coach quarterbacks, he took Hooker from somebody that wasn't even – I mean, Virginia Tech couldn't move the ball. And he made him into a good player. The offense is fit for the quarterback. They've got great skill players. Let's face it. They got great skill. And what I like about them is their defense is really, I think, undervalued.
Yeah. And look, you bring a good point up. So you've got that knowledge. And that's why you got to read, you know, these bettors out here. They need to read because, you know, you're exactly right. This coach can develop this kid just like he did Hooker. And the rest of the ingredients are there. The reason why they're 35 or 40-1 is because they got a new quarterback coming in. If Hooker was there, you know, then you're talking about 4 or 5-1. They're right in the mix with everybody. But that's where you find the value by having that knowledge that you have.
Jake Jack, we got about 30 seconds left. Alabama right now is plus 105 to win the SEC West. LSU is plus 175. A&M's plus 550. Who do you think ultimately meets Georgia in the SEC title game in Atlanta in December?
Man, I mean, you know, I mean, that game November 4th, I believe it is, it's going to be everything. It's everything for Alabama and for LSU. I'm a big LSU homer. I want to see them do good. I'm a big Nick Saban fan, and it's going to be awfully tough to win against Alabama.
Yeah, they took him to the brink last year, but that, of course, that game being in Baton Rouge with LSU being able to knock off Alabama. But we'll see what happens in Tuscaloosa later on in November. He is Carl Jig Jag Johnson, sportsbook director over at the Bar Revive. Jig Jag, be well, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, you guys. Good luck.
Awesome stuff there from Jig Jag. We begin hour number two on the other side, talking to spotlighting the Denver Broncos.